Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, filling in for your normal host, Michael the Pod Pina. This week, I'm Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadrini. I'm really excited today to be joined by my old friend, Chicago's most eligible bachelor, our resident draft expert at Sports Illustrated, SI staff writer Jeremy Wu. Wu, what's going on, man?
Yo, it's the morning after the draft. I'm really tired.
How much coffee did you have last night? I'm excited for you. This is what you prepare for all year.
Honestly, no coffee. I had coffee yesterday morning. I don't usually drink it at night. The draft night itself is always like such a rush because there's just a lot of stuff happening really quick. So it's like you can't really, even if you're tired, you can't like, it's one of those things. It's like adrenaline kind of at this point because you're, the way, you know, the cycle is just so like long. It takes the whole year. It builds up to like one day. You know, this whole week, you're kind of just working the whole time. At least for me, I am. And then, you know, boom, it's over and you're wrong about half the stuff that you thought you knew. So, you know, you just, I compare it. It's kind of like being a gladiator. It's like you go in and you probably know you're going to die anyway, but it's for the glory. It's
not for the- There we go. For the glory. Yeah. Well, we have a ton of draft stuff I want to get to. First, I just want to remind our listeners, first of all, thank you for sticking with us this week with Michael out. I know everyone misses him. I miss him. He's on vacation. He hasn't talked to me either. So, you know, we're all in the same boat there. But please keep those emails coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. We love the emails. Jeremy, there's so much I want to get to with you. First, can you tell me a little bit about what your setup is like on draft night? Is your phone blowing up the whole night? Are you even watching the draft coverage? Are you just following Twitter? How do you take in the draft?
Yeah, so typically, and this is, I guess, like the fourth or fifth draft I've done, like full time. So like usually, you know, I'm doing the live reaction, so I'm set up with my laptop, I'm writing. I'm also at the same time texting as many people as possible, trying to figure out what's going on. Every now and then I get lucky and I break a pick, which honestly I don't care about. I just find it entertaining to try. And if someone is like, oh, here goes, okay, thanks. It's not like a point of pride for me. I just do it because it's funny. So I'm doing that and I'm trying to break down the picks and I'm also trying to keep track of what's going on. And so usually the way I do it is, you know, I'll have the TV on in the background, but I'm like, it might as well be on mute, right? It's just background.
Right.
And then I have my phone next to me. And I have Twitter alerts on my phone for, you know, people who break news too, so I can at least see, you know, if I don't get something that I can just, it's an easy, handy way to like scroll down the list and be like, oh, here's the order of what just happened. So I use that to like stay organized. But it's not too bad. It's just chaotic.
Right.
And it, you know, but, and the other thing is, you always forget how long the draft takes because the second round feels like it takes forever.
Well, yeah, because people like me watch the lottery and they're like, all right, we're good to go. But then there's a whole, you know, second half of the first round and a second round. So,
Yeah, it feels longer than, yeah, especially when you get to like 25, 26, and you're like, just tell me what's going to happen. I don't, Yeah.
Just simulate to the end, like on 2K, you know, you're just like, tell me the results. Yeah.
Yeah, you made your pick and just fast forward.
Exactly, yeah. Let the CPU handle the rest. So if you follow SI's draft coverage at all, you guys know Jeremy's all over this stuff. You've seen, you know, his mock drafts. You know about every prospect. It's incredible. I'm so in awe of the work you do on the draft because I know nothing about the draft until like a weekend, and then I just read everything you've done over the course of the year, and I feel up to date. But before we even get to the prospects, we had a major trade in the NBA last night. Somehow, I think, not flying under the radar, but it doesn't feel like the shockwave it should be, and we'll get to why, I guess. But the Lakers, my hometown Los Angeles Lakers, trading for Russell Westbrook, giving up Montrezl Harrell, Kyle Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and a first-round pick that the Wizards turned into Aaron Holiday. The Lakers get Russell Westbrook and multiple second-round picks. Wu, did you like have an idea about this deal coming at all? What was your reaction? Just tell me everything you felt when you heard about this going down.
Yeah, so I knew it was possible because I had heard earlier in the week that, you know, Westbrook wanted to go to LA. Not enough to report anything about it, but you know, I had an inkling that something was going on there. And for a minute, it felt like Bradley Beal was going to be the bigger story, but I think Westbrook wanted to jump ship first. I almost forgot that the trade happened. Like I after the draft, I was like, oh wow, yeah, that, you know, just trying to recap what was going on, trying to process. And it's kind of just funny because it's like I think just I would say with Westbrook in particular, it just feels like he's not as exciting of a name as he once was, and his contract is so big. And you know, one hand it's just like okay, but at the same time, you know, it is the Lakers. It is a big deal because they had to. I think they knew they had to do something. I don't think they're done. Like I think they had pretty big plans in free agency. I don't know, you know, what you know, having Westbrook is gonna, you know, mean for the rest of their stuff. You know, I haven't had the time to like look at their salaries and stuff, but it is a significant addition, you know, to their team. You know, can he fit with LeBron? Can he fit with Anthony Davis? I think so, because generally, just if you have guys who are that good, and LeBron is proving this theory time and again too. Just when he's in the game, like it's usually fine. So. All the supporting cast guys going out, you know, I honestly haven't had that much time to even think about it. But for the Lakers, I think it's a step in the right direction because they had to do something, because if they ran it back, nothing was going to change.
So one of the things being talked about leading up to that trade was they might be sending a similar package to Sacramento for Buddy Hield. Now, because of like complicated league rules, et cetera, salary things, draft things, this deal can't be official until a week or so into free agency. I think around August 6th is when it needs to be official, is when it can be official. A Memphis trade needs to happen first, etc. Some people think maybe Buddy Hield can still be involved. The Lakers still have Dennis Schroeder, who maybe could be used as a trade chip and a sign and trade, etc. Are you hearing anything on the Buddy Hield front? Any idea what's going on there?
I don't. I also, obviously that was reported that was possible. I mean, my guess is that, I mean, unless there's another team that wants to take Schroeder, I don't know that that's, I mean, just off the top of my head, I don't know if that's something that can happen. It just like as a straight sign and trade because the Kings have so many guards, they're not going to take Schroeder. You know, clearly they might've been more interested in the other stuff. So I don't know. I would just assume that that's, you know, something else for now, like not necessarily imminent or going to happen. But that's just totally me just trying to guess it, you know, the logic, well, the flow of it. Yeah.
One thing that is always difficult to do with the Kings is apply logic. One could have said they had too many guards even before the draft, and then they go ahead and draft another one. I'll just say about the Westbrook trade, I do not think it was a great move for the Lakers, and it's pretty risky considering LeBron right now has 2 years left on his contract. He's going to be 37 this season. You can't afford to waste a day of LeBron's career at this point. Even though he was playing at MVP level last year, showed no signs of slowing down, unless you want to, you know, count kind of that freak ankle injury. I don't know, man. I think it's a risk. I think Westbrook can help them a lot during the regular season if they're trying to pace LeBron and AD. Westbrook never paces himself. That's not his style of play. I just think of back to the bubble when the Lakers played the Rockets in the playoffs and they were doubling off Russell Westbrook to throw doubles at James Harden and basically just ignoring Russell Westbrook on the perimeter. This is a team that struggles with shooting. I believe 10th worst three-point percentage in the regular season last year. And now they're trying to fold Westbrook into it. Is Davis going to commit to – the only way this works is if Anthony Davis commits to playing center, LeBron commits to playing power forward, and they can bring in two other shooters. But we haven't seen AD commit to that his entire career. He hasn't committed to it with the Lakers, even though that's been their best lineup. And I'm a little worried because I think Hield would have made a lot more sense, and now the Lakers are down to basically no trade assets left unless some team wants to take on Schroeder. I don't know, man. I when I saw that trade, I was like, I just don't know how Russell Westbrook fits into a championship context anymore. That's what I'm worried about. Is I don't understand how you build a title winning team around him. Obviously, he's talented, but he's just such a difficult puzzle piece because of his lack of shooting, because of how much control he wants to exert. I don't see him and LeBron coexisting down the stretch of a fourth quarter. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I'm worried about this trade for the Lakers.
Yeah, honestly, like, I'm a little bit more optimistic about it just because I think they had to do something. And the market for, you know, really, there wasn't as much of a market for, like, really good players, right? So they're not giving up anything of, like, considerable future worth to get him, right? So I don't think the risk is that high. I mean, the number 22 pick that they traded, you know, objectively was not a crazy valuable one, and the Wizards traded it again. So, and, like, I just don't see what they had to lose. I mean, like, I'm not going to cry about trading KCP. You know, Montrezl Harrell is Montrezl Harrell. Kyle Kuzma is vastly overrated all the time. So I honestly don't think they had to give up that much to do it. And they got 2 seconds, but I mean, I don't know if those are real seconds, irrelevant, but, yeah, to me, it's not that risky just because you had to do something. And at the end of the day, I think having elite players kind of trumps everything. They have two of them. Russell Westbrook is not one anymore, but he's, you know, clearly pretty good. So, like, he's still really productive. You know, those guys find a way to figure it out. I think, you know, if Westbrook is ever going to, like, fall in line and, like, kind of, you know, I mean, it's with this team, it's with other guys. And so, again, like I said, I don't think they're done. Like, I think they'll try to find another way to, you know, use Schroeder to get another guy in some type of construct, sign and trade. I don't know. They definitely, you know, are going to keep trying to add. I understand what you're saying with the late game stuff, but I wouldn't necessarily overthink it. Because again, it's just the other guys are going to draw so much attention. Westbrook is a good cutter. You know, he has figured out, like, the off ball stuff. He did it with Harden, and LeBron is still, you know, one of the best passers in the NBA, if not the best. So I can see it working. It's not perfect. I think history has shown, particularly with LeBron James, that, you know, this is what happens. What you do is when you have him, it's a ticking clock, and you're going to have to, you know, use what you have to maximize that window. And I think even more so, like you said, now that he's older, you know, all these days matter. So, you know, they might be weird in the regular season because LeBron teams always are, and all that stuff. But I think when, you know, in the playoffs, when it's like time to win games, I don't think Russell Westbrook is going to be the one who has the ball. I hope. So I'm not as worried as you are. I think you got to, you know, put the cart before the horse.
Yeah, fair enough. You're convincing me a tiny bit, and I do think there's something to say about LeBron seemingly always finding a way to make it work with the co-stars that are brought in to play with him. And him and Russ obviously have a relationship. So, and obviously this trade doesn't happen without LeBron and AD giving it the okay. So obviously those guys are going to want to try to make it work. Obviously, it feels like the series we want to see never happen anymore. But if you just allow yourself to daydream about a Lakers-Nets series for even a moment of finals, just the storylines there, LeBron going up against Kyrie, Russ going up against KD and Harden, LeBron versus KD, all those things, it would be incredible. I think I'd pick the Nets to win that series. I'm just going to throw that out there. We'll get to the Nets later, certainly. But it was a fascinating move. You do make a good point. I mean, I also think Russ is going to be movable in a year if this goes up in flames. He'll have a massive expiring contract, assuming he opts in after this season. I think he's owed $47 million, something like that. In which case, we just look at it right now. Well, is it weird to you that every contract that we thought maybe a year or two ago was untradeable is now being traded all the time? We've seen John Wall, Russ getting traded a couple times. Does that surprise you at all that all these, like, untradeable contracts are now being moved seemingly all the time?
No, just because of how much, like, value can shift. And I think we over exaggerate when we say untradeable, because if you attach enough stuff to something, you know, you can kind of do anything. You know, you have to obviously match salaries and be creative, but, you know, that's why teams have people on staff to, you know, do the cap stuff and figure it out and come up with billions of scenarios and stuff. So I'm not shocked, but it, you know, obviously Chris Paul becoming really valuable was something that we wouldn't have thought necessarily. But also, I think it all, you know, these guys are both in Houston with Harden, who, you know, kind of is like a black hole in the sense that he, you know, he has kind of stopped saying everything around him, but it's about him, right? Like the other guys were a little bit deflated playing with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a knock on him. It was just what happened. So I'm not shocked. But again, I don't think this is like a huge trade for Washington. It's not like they didn't get a ton of real stuff, but they did.
Right.
What they really did was they got off of Westbrook and they created a lot more flexibility and pathways to, you know, being a playoff team next year, you know, and trying to keep Beal happy, right? So it's if Westbrook wanted out, unhappy Westbrook was not going to further that goal, right? So it's not always just player value. It's also like situation and context for why teams, you know, haven't been able to do this stuff. So.
I do really like it, actually, for Washington. I mean, you pick up a few solid rotation players there. I know you said Kuzma's overrated. I am interested to see what he can do in kind of a role away from the Lakers chaos and all that stuff and maybe get a more consistent situation in Washington. But let's get to the draft. We're going to keep it simple. We're going to run through some winners and losers. I'm pretty sure mine are going to be much different than yours. So let me start with you. Tell me who your big winner was. Give me your first winner. When you think of winners and losers, who do you like?
I think I would go with Orlando, which is kind of funny because, you know, everyone really thought they'd won in Scottie Barnes. Toronto takes him at number four. But then Orlando ends up with another really good player, Jalen Suggs, who, you know, I had ranked higher than Barnes. I think, you know, a lot of people preferred Suggs to Barnes. And again, you know, with the Magic, it's always interesting because they have so many guys, but it just comes down to at the end of the day, like they're not going to be able to keep everybody. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, Suggs might be the best guard in their team right away. Like, I think he's probably more valuable than Markel Fultz. And then they went and got Franz Wagner at number eight, you know, which is a pick I expected that they would make. I think it's a good addition to the team. I mean, those are two good defenders. It kind of changes the contract of their team a little bit. And I just think it's good value. You know, if you have, you know, they had five and eight and everyone was like, well, what are they going to do with those two picks? You know, eight was kind of going to be a hard pick no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they made the right decision. And I think getting Suggs, as much as they like Barnes, I think Suggs, they really needed help in the backcourt. And it's, you know, they're going to have to figure out what to do with Cole Anthony and RJ Hampton and Fultz and, you know, all these other guys. But at the end of the day, you know, you need the guys with like the star power. And you know, I don't know if Suggs is like a star, but I think he's going to be really good.
I will throw in there that I do think Orlando is one of those teams that they don't have a can't miss player that would prevent them from just taking the best guy on the board.
Exactly.
Tell me why you liked Suggs more than Scottie Barnes. Because I think Barnes was probably, safe to say, the first surprise pick of the top five. Not that it was shocking he went there, but like you said, I don't know if people were expecting Toronto to take him. Tell me a little bit about the Barnes versus Suggs a little bit. Why'd you like Suggs more?
Yeah. I watch a lot of college basketball. Mm-hmm. I was at the NCAA tournament, watched them. Yeah, I got to see both those guys play multiple times when I was there, which is cool. And again, I've also been watching these guys since they were teenagers in high school, right? And so you know, the thing with Barnes for me, you know, I had him number five, so it wasn't a big drop off. But for me, there was some delineation between Suggs and Barnes, just in a vacuum. And no one drafts in a vacuum,
right?
So. You know, with Suggs, I mean, I really think it's hard to find guards who compete the way he does all the time, who have actual offensive upside like him, and who are also elite athletes. You know, that's one thing. Again, it's like I go to a lot of decent amount of high school stuff. You know, I at least am familiar with a lot of these guys and sort of their pathway, you know, to the NBA over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really hard to find elite players who really have the toughness. You know, people make a big deal of Suggs being a elite football player or whatever, but he does have, you know, that mindset. He's okay getting hit. He likes to hit, you know, go into the paint, and like, he just kind of like keeps playing through mistakes. And so, you know, I think that's valuable. It's just hard to find guys with his type of makeup. And so I like that he can play both guard spots. I like that he doesn't have to score necessarily all the time to make an impact on the game. So with Barnes, it's different. You know, I think he rose definitely in terms of public perception, and he really won the interview, you know, with teams. You know, everyone loves him. Just a very well-liked person all around, the high school basketball landscape. And, no, it's hard to find anyone who has bad things to say about him. He's been through a lot in his life. He on the floor, a really, really good defender, really long. He's an incredible passer. I think that you kind of really had to dig into the film to see some of the passes that he made, but he can really, really pass. And there's some skill upside for him to be a guy who can, not really a point guard, but at least who can like bring it up and like get you into something and, throw a good pass and be like a transition playmaker. I think he'll do that. But I think there's a couple big questions with him, which is, primarily his jumper, which has never been great. And then, just how much he's going to score. Like it's, I don't know if he's ever going to average more than like 15 or 16, 17 points a game tops. He's just not like a guy who's wired to score. But again, you draft him because you think he's going to be really, really good at everything else. And Toronto is in a unique position because, they are, more or less a playoff team with the playoff roster. They had a bad year. They lucked out and jumped to four. And they were in a position to take someone who wasn't necessarily a scorer who can enhance the other guys. So it's a really good fit for Barnes because he's going to be able to do what he's comfortable doing. And they won't have to rush him to be a scorer or anything, right? So you understand why you're Toronto, why you would really think about going that direction. But for me, again, in a vacuum, for me, I'm not drafting for a team. I would take Suggs. But that's sort of how I would break that decision down.
It's interesting. You bring up Toronto as a playoff team. Toronto is like still really good. They had by far the hardest season in the NBA last year. They played all their games in Tampa. I mean, every single game was on the road. I don't know how that front office begins to judge that team. And they're interesting because you hear Siakam pop up in all these trade rumors, and obviously they gave him the big contract. He maybe has a little bit of a strained relationship with Nick Nurse. But I'm with you. I think Toronto is really good. I think they're a piece or two away from being maybe not a title contender, but I mean, it wouldn't shock me if the Raptors were back in the Eastern Conference Finals in a year or two. Van Vliet's a proven playoff performer. Siakam can be really good. Anunoby's a really good player. They have Gary Trent now. They have a lot of interesting pieces. I'm fascinated to see, especially what they do with Siakam, because I think that they are right on the verge of building another perennial playoff team there. I want to give you my first winner. Now, as you know, Wu, I'm not the draft expert. I don't have the flowing, beautiful hair that you do and the ability to just crunch college basketball and high school tape. So let me tell you my first winner. It's the Brooklyn Nets, okay? And here's why it's the Brooklyn Nets. Sure, they picked up, a couple guys at the end of the first round there. De'Aaron Sharp, Cam Thomas, guys who maybe can be in the rotation, maybe even get a few minutes in the playoffs here or there. But if I'm the Nets, I'm thrilled that none of the contenders, at least now, made a move that I'm worried about. The Lakers make the Westbrook trade. I think if any team's not scared of that move, it's the Nets. They're intimately familiar with him. I think the Nets are by far the favorite to make it out of the East going into next season. Probably favorites to win the title, frankly. We saw how good they were with most of their players hurt during the playoffs. But just, I mean, look around the league, at least heading into free agency, the Clippers are dealing with, the injury to Kawhi. The Jazz are trying to clear some money right now to re-sign Mike Conley. The Nuggets have the Jamal Murray injury hanging over them. The Sixers are still stuck with Ben Simmons at the moment, which I'm sure we'll get to. But yeah, I look at it on the Nets. I'm pretty happy that, teams like the Warriors or nobody was able to package picks and make that big move. Bradley Beal staying put in Washington, I think, is great news for the Nets for now. So I look at Brooklyn. I think they got to be really happy because, they're only judging what other contenders are doing. And I think right now, obviously free agency, there's a lot of offseason left, but I think the Nets are actually in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. Obviously a lot still has to play out with free agency. I think we're going to see more stuff happen. So I wouldn't be, not that you're saying this, but obviously we'll see what those other, contending teams do. But yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, I know Golden State tried a bunch of different stuff. It seemed like everything Philly wanted for Ben Simmons was too much for anybody. Which I think was probably strategic. I think they probably wanted to drag this out. And I think they're probably waiting to see if Lillard gets, unsettled what Lillard's going to do, if he ultimately decides he wants out or not. That's my guess. So that whole star cycle is going to play out over the next couple months. It could even go into the season, like what happened with James Harden. Hard to say. Yeah, I mean, I can, the Nets actual draft, I thought was pretty good. I really love De'Ron Sharpe at number 29. He was a guy who their teams thought could have snuck into the top 20 in some scenarios. It didn't happen. But I think he's a great value pick at 29. I think it also shows sort of the way, centers were devalued a little bit in this draft. There weren't really many bigs that went in the first round. I think it was really just three bigs. It was Evan Mobley, Alperen Sengun, and De'Ron Sharpe. And I guess you could throw in Isaiah Jackson and Ousmane Garuba, but those guys are more little different, like not like traditional centers necessarily. But I think De'Ron Sharpe is going to help them, because I think, one thing you saw with the Nets in the playoffs this year is they struggled. They didn't have enough big bodies, to match up with, the better centers. I think they're hoping he can at least give them some minutes in that context. They got Cam Thomas at number 27. Not my kind of guy. Not really a player I like that much. But he can score. And sometimes when you take guys who are scorers and you're like, hey, you have to play a role now, and you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie, so you got to pass them the ball, like, kids will kind of like fall in line, right? I think that's what they're hoping.
Yeah, I do
And
think,
they, yeah.
no, the Nets have the luxury of anyone who they bring in. I mean, we saw it with Bruce Brown, where they say, we just need you to do one or two things, and you're going to get a ton of advantageous opportunities. Players can thrive in that situation. I mean, look what they did for Blake Griffin, Bruce Brown, etc. I think it's going to be a huge boon for Cam Thomas and De'Ron Sharpe in terms of they're not going to be asked to do too much. There's not going to be a lot of pressure on them. They're going to be huge beneficiaries of playing alongside all that top-end talent that it might not be roles they want for their whole career, but I think it's a nice way to ease into the league. I want to put a pin in what you said about the Warriors and Ben Simmons. We'll get back to them certainly. But tell me another winner you had from this draft.
Yeah, I also really liked what Charlotte did, and like I feel weird saying I'm excited about the Hornets, but I kind of am. But they what happened was, James Bouknight, who's a guy I like at the top 10 pick.
Well, you had Bouknight, I think, going sixth or something, right? You really like Bouknight.
So I had Bouknight at the top 10 pick the entire year. So I was like on him. I went and saw him play right before the pandemic started. I went to a UConn game. I was like taking a trip. I was up, I went and saw Obi Toppin play at Rhode Island with Dayton, and then I saw UConn play on the way back. And I wasn't like on Bouknight, and then I saw him. I was like, oh, this guy is. So I had him as like my top returning college guy. I was really intrigued by him. So for him to be there at number 11 is a really
Did you
nice
see
value for
him?
Charlotte.
Did you see him play in Storrs, Connecticut? Where were you for this?
I was in Storrs, Connecticut. Yeah.
Can you please tell me what Storrs, Connecticut is like? What did you do there? What does one do when they're not going to a UConn game?
I did very little. It was like I was on my way. I was driving back from Rhode Island, so it took me a little time to get there because it wasn't close to anything. But UConn, their actual basketball facility is really cool. It's like in the middle of the woods. And there's like they have the basketball complex there, the arena, practice facility. It's actually really nice. Like I would be down to like play there if I was a player. It's kind of it feels like it's kind of middle of nowhere because it is. But anyway, I don't think people are here for that. So I think. But yeah, so Bouknight. Basically, a lot of people thought the Thunder were going to take him. That turned out to be a Sam Presti smokescreen special, which honestly I suspected, but I didn't know what to do. So I just kind of like stuck him there. It's one of the follies of mock drafting. It's like you can only go off the information you have sometimes. But the Thunder took Josh Giddey, which I had heard was possible, but I don't know if I had fully given enough thought to it. So I didn't put him there. I didn't know he was going to go there. But I don't think anyone was sure what Oklahoma City was doing. So anyway, they don't take him. And then the Kuminga goes to the Warriors. The Magic took Suggs. The Magic weren't going to take Bouknight. The Kings took Davion Mitchell. Surprise. Surprise pick. And then the Grizzlies took Zaire Williams, which was another surprise pick. And so then Bouknight's there for Charlotte. So, now they get one of the best scorers in the draft. I do think it probably means Terry Rozier at some point will probably go elsewhere. Just if Bouknight's really good, like they hope he is, you have him and LaMelo, pretty electric backcourt. And then the other guy they really wanted at 11 was Kai Jones, who then they don't take at 11 because Bouknight's there. But then Kai Jones falls, you know, he's falling into the teens, and then Charlotte, you know, trades in to number 19 with the Knicks and takes Kai Jones at 19. So I thought they had a great draft. You know, they got the guys they wanted. They got two players I really liked who I had as lottery talent. And they got him like at later spots. And I think Kai Jones, and I know you want to talk about next year's draft a little bit. So we can kind of get into that later. But I think Kai Jones, you know, he's so long. He's pretty versatile defensively, a little bit upside on offense. But I think he has the potential, like, you know, with his size and his length and his mobility to be a guy who can guard like these big skilled guys who are coming, like the Chet Holmgrens, the Victor Wembanyamas. Like, you know, these are the sort of the next wave of elite prospects. We're seeing more of these tall, skilled guys. And so if Kai Jones can guard those guys, great.
What stood out to you about Booknight when you saw him? Why did you like him so much? Why did he leap off that court in the middle of the woods in stores? What drew you to him? What do you think of him as a prospect?
Yeah, it was just, I think, you know, so when I saw him play, he was a freshman. And it was just, I think the poise he had was like really, really notable. You know, he's really also really athletic. He kind of like, he's one of those guys who kind of glides, like it sounds cliche and stupid, but he kind of does. Like the way that he moves is a little bit different. He's so smooth. And he was very just kind of like clinical. It's like, you know, a lot of guys who are college scorers are just like taking wild shots and shoot a bad percentage. But like, you know, he, I don't know if the numbers always will show it. But generally, he's a much more decisive half-court player than you think for a guy who's like profiles the way he does as like an athletic bucket getter. And again, we have to keep it in context. Sometimes these scorers, their numbers, you know, look a certain way because college basketball is tough and gross to watch, and you know, you get a lot of like bad late clock shots happen. That's just inevitably that happens, and it's tasked with the best player to do it, and that, you know, those are hard shots to make for anyone. So sometimes you got to keep in that context in mind, right? But you know, I was just impressed with him. He rebounds. He, like, I don't think he's a bad defender. I think his feel is really good. I just thought he was a stud. You know, I thought he should have been a first-round pick last year. But, you know, he obviously goes back and goes in the lottery. So, you know, he helped himself for sure. And, again, he was hurt a lot of the season. You know, his elbow was injured. He had elbow surgery in the middle of the year. It was his left, not his shooting elbow. But, you know, he came back and he just wasn't the same. He couldn't really go left as comfortably. So, you know, I think all those things contributed, but I get why he didn't go in the top 10. But, you know, for 11, for Charlotte, it's a great value pick to me.
I want to jump to what you said about the Sam Presti smokescreen. Presti's really just in his own world right now when it comes to building this Thunder team, obviously building one of the biggest draft pick war chests we've ever seen, and I'm sure he's going to be in play for some of those future guys that you mentioned. The Giddey pick, I think, was probably the most surprising pick of the top 10. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what did you think of that move for the Thunder? Obviously, you thought it was possible, not necessarily likely, but what do you think of that, them picking up Giddey?
I actually kind of liked it for them. You know, the more I looked at the draft, and I think other people kind of felt the same way too, obviously, because he was strongly in play at 7 for Golden State. I don't know if they would have taken him over Kuminga, but I know that was a conversation they had to have. So, look, it just comes down to, like, he's really big and he's a really, really good passer. And, you know, those I think this is a strategy that has sort of I kind of like now that I, you know, I've talked to teams about. And it's just, like, get as many 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", dudes as possible who are skilled and who have things they're really good at, and just like throw them out there and kind of like see what happens. And like,
right.
Giddey is great for that strategy. You know, he's a pretty good athlete. He's one of the Jeff's best passers. Was like so impressive in Australia this year, and he's 18. So he's a guy I got to scout him a little bit. He played in the NBA's Global Academy program, so I think he's their first guy to get drafted. And obviously, he went super high. It's great for them. But I was always really impressed with him. Just as a passer, as a just like a poised guy, like he's always played like a lot older, like he's an older guy, and he's also used to playing with vets. You know, he's played for the Australian national team. He's in their program, obviously not at the Olympics, but you know, he will be in the future. You know, people rave about him off the court. He's a legit talent, and so again, if you think about, well, Cade Cunningham was number one, and Josh Giddey is also a really big playmaker who can really pass. You know, he doesn't do all the same things Cade does, but you know, still kind of a lesser version of that idea. Yeah, sure. Like, why not? Like, if you look at what else is there, OKC has a blank slate to draft whoever they want.
Right.
They didn't need to take on the Kuminga risk. They just get Giddy and, you know, just throw him in there, and he's going to be able to play with those other guys. So, you know, I like that pickup. It was out of the box. And I wish I had, like, thought harder about it and seen it coming. I didn't. But I like that pick for them.
Cool. I want to go to another one of my winners before we get to losers here. I just want to say a win for the G League Ignite team, man. How about that? They have two guys go in the top seven, I believe. The Ignite thing is interesting to me because obviously it's a viable option for players who want to get paid and be in a little bit more of a professional program before they go to the NBA. On the other hand, you now have the NIL situation in college athletics where guys can, you know, accept money, do sponsorships, etc. It evens the playing field to an extent, I believe. I mean, you have, I think, college players now with an opportunity to make seven figures. I mean, if you're imagine what Zion Williamson could have made at Duke if NIL, you know, rules were different for him then. I'm curious if you think that is going to have any effect on the Ignite team moving forward, what you think about just the Ignite idea and how it could kind of play out over the next couple of years as it relates to the draft.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's going to be interesting to see is whether, you know, when we have the next collective bargaining agreement, you know, whether or not they go back to the 18 age as the age minimum, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that hasn't been a big contention point. It seems like, I don't think the players union has really pushed for it from what I've heard. I don't think it was ever that big of a deal to teams because they like having an extra year to scout guys because it helps you make better decisions. You know, I know that Adam Silver originally wanted it, and I think there was, you know, an element of it where the NCAA at the time was obviously under a lot more scrutiny. So now you have the NIL stuff. It changes. It's more viable to go to college. I think for a number, there's probably just not as much urgency to change that. But I think Ignite mm-hmm. is going to be here to stay at least for a little bit. And I think, look, like Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga, those are elite prospects in high school. They could have done whatever they wanted. They probably still would have been top 10 picks. But I do think it was good for Ignite. You saw a guy like Isaiah Todd, who went at number 31. It's a good spot for him. And he, you know, to the Wizards, you know, wasn't sure coming into the year if he was going to get drafted. He was more of like a late second round guy. And he really did help himself. There were teams who had him as a first rounder. So, you know, it was a win for him. And they had one guy, Deshaun Nix, go undrafted. But, that, you know, that's going to happen sometimes. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, Ignite, I think the jury's still kind of out. But I do think it's like useful to watch guys there because if you're familiar with the quality of the G League level, you know, you can kind of get a feel for how good they are. You can, you know, get to see them, you know, out of their comfort zone. Like, part of the hard thing scouting high school sometimes is not only that some of these guys are just so much better than everyone else, and it's like hard to sometimes you have to be able to like parse through what matters and what doesn't. But also, it's just like sometimes they're not really dealing with a lot of adversity. And again, not that G League Ignite is adverse, but, you know, when you are playing, you know, in the G League against older guys with, you know, more developed bodies, it is a different challenge. And it's something that you have to see guys figure out on their own, especially as when they're teenagers, they're 18-year-old guys making a leap straight from high school to pro. So I think that element of it is nice when you're scouting. I don't think it affected Green and Kuminga necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But the other guy, you know, Isaiah Todd, it definitely helped.
I was also really hard to scout in high school because of how much better I was than everyone else. So I definitely understand what those G League guys were going through. Let's get to some losers, Woo. Who took a big fat L Thursday night? Give me your first loser. You don't have to be as mean as I am, but who did you maybe like a little bit less?
I did not love Memphis's draft.
Mm-hmm.
And so they walked away with Zaire Williams at number 10.
And it's important to mention they traded up for that pick.
Right.
In the deal with New Orleans for Steven Adams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, they took Santi Aldama, who is, you know, not someone anyone expected to go in the first round. They took him at number 30. And so, again, I will say Memphis has done a good job drafting in recent years. And so I think we have to give them some, you know, benefit of the doubt. Like, they obviously know what they're doing, but, you know, from what I understand, like, you know, they did pick up number 10 hoping that either Giddy or Franz Wagner, one of those two guys, was going to be there at 10. Since those guys aren't there, you know, and Zaire Williams, I guess, you know, was the next guy on their board, I would assume, and, you know, the guy they liked the most. I did hear that Memphis liked him, But I didn't expect him to go at number 10. It just seemed like a little bit too high. I don't know if he would have made it to 17 if they'd stayed on 17, right? So I don't want to say like they didn't have to trade up because we don't know. But, you know, he was a guy who I had is in more of like the next group of guys coming off the board. You know, I've never been like a huge Zaire Williams guy. You know, he just frankly has not been a super productive or consistent player. He wasn't at Stanford. And, you know, obviously he was among a lot of guys who had a tough year in college. So you don't want to entirely hold it against him. But he wasn't super consistent in high school either. He was more of a guy who was ranked highly because he was an interesting idea. Then, you know, he was a really, really good player yet. So, you know, maybe they help him find his in top end of his potential. Like he is 6'9", he can shoot, he can handle. Like you watch him, you know, I've watched him work out. I watched him when I was in Vegas a couple months ago. And, you know, obviously you see him and you're like, that's probably, you know, justifiably a lottery talent. You know, that has never changed with him. But it's just a matter of whether or not he, you know, gets close to that, you know, starter level potential. So we'll see what happens. I didn't love that pick. I didn't think it was great value relative to what the market was for him. But again, I don't know everything about that. And then, you know, taking Aldama at 30, I was just going to say, I think what happened was, and I tweeted this, people thought OKC was going to take him, I think. Mm. So I think my guess is that Memphis, they were at 40, I believe, and they felt like they had to get in front of the Thunder at like 34. So my guess is that's why they did it. They just must have really loved him. And, you know, analytics love that guy. He was playing in the Patriot League. So, you know, I watched him a couple times. It wasn't really a guy who I expected to be a first-round pick.
What do you think goes through a team's mind when they make a move like Memphis did, expecting two guys to be there at number 10? You know, making not a major trade, but, I mean, giving up a valuable piece in Valanciunas, who played really good minutes for them last season. What do you think goes through their mind when the two guys they want at that spot are gone? Maybe they're not expecting that. Are teams used to dealing with that? Do you think there's a level of panic? What do you think goes through a front office when they're really hoping for two guys at a certain spot and they're both gone?
Yeah, well, you know, I will add, like, I know Memphis tried to trade up.
Oh.
So they tried to trade up again after they traded up. And so I think they called about number three. They called Cleveland about number three. I don't think that went that far. I don't know for sure. But I know that was, you know, something that was discussed. And then I know they tried to get to number seven. I think that's where they were targeting, that Warriors pick. And Golden State ultimately did not come back off that, right? So then you're kind of left holding the bag at number 10. You know, I would think it's kind of like, oh, shit, we won't swear on this podcast or not.
I guess you just did.
So it's kind of like that, right? Maybe it's like, oh, well, this is happening now. But at the end of the day, look, like, teams are still prepared for stuff like when this happens, and you got to go to your board and trust your board. So, you know, Zaire Williams was their guy. They took him at number 10, and, you know, it's maybe not what they expected, but at least they did end up with a guy who they do like, right? It's not like they took someone who, like, they never would have drafted. Like, you're still taking someone who's high on your board. It just relative to what we expect, we don't always know. It just shows you how little consensus there can be.
You mentioned this team. This is my first loser. It's not really the Warriors, but it's Steph Curry, because I think a lot of people were circling the Warriors as one of those teams that were going to be active in trade discussions, and we were seeing reports right up until they picked Jonathan Kuminga at number 7 that they were engaged in trade discussions. They're in a win-now position, right? It's similar to the Lakers. Steph is playing at an MVP level. Klay Thompson should finally be returning next season. They're going to have the core. Their three best players from that 73-win team will finally be back on the court together this year, and they can't afford to waste any time. And I think Kuminga could be a good player. They got Moses Moody too, I believe. I think it's not so much that I think they selected bad guys. I really like the Kuminga types, just these big athletic guys, and see what happens with them. But they're both projects to an extent. They need guys who can give them playoff minutes in 2022, because with Steph, there's no reason why you shouldn't be expecting to be putting a title contender together. Can you tell me a little bit, how hard were the Warriors trying to move their two picks? I'm sure Wiggins was probably coming up in discussions, maybe even Wiseman. I mean, it's still possible they swing a trade. I know Siakam's been linked to them, but I thought this was a bad night for Steph Curry, because this was really an opportunity for Golden State to kind of add an impact veteran or two And really, I think, put themselves right back in the conversation at the top of the West. Instead, they pick up guys who I think, you know, if you were telling me you had a team that was Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody, and you were rebuilding, I might be excited. But it's a little bit different when you have Steph, Clay, and Dre. What'd you think of the Warriors night?
Yeah, so I can tell you for sure, based on, you know, what I was hearing, they definitely were calling around all day. They made a ton of efforts to try to, you know, use those picks to do something. I don't think anyone was untouchable besides, you know, those the three main guys, I assume. I don't think they offered Steph Curry. But, you know, I know Wiseman was available. Like, they really tried to, you know, do whatever they could. Ultimately ended up staying put. And again, they got two good prospects. But like you said, it wasn't necessarily the outcome that would have – well, I'll put it this way. I don't know if there was honestly an outcome that would have been a huge difference maker. Like, even if they had taken Kuminga and then taken Chris Duarte, who I know they wanted at 14, like, even if – or Davion Mitchell, who they really loved. Like, if they, even if they took one of those two guys, they're still rookies. And, like, if you're a really good team, you're probably not going to want to play rookies that much. So – I don't know that there was necessarily like two home run picks, but yeah, it just shows it's like, unless you have a really, really elite, like high level top four, top five pick, sometimes it's hard to extract value. And you know, it was kind of what happened to them. So I do think there's a case to be made. They do at some point have to prepare for the future and they have to keep building. And you know, they could have taken Corey Kispert at 15. They took Moody, who's the better long-term prospect, which I get. You know, they took the guy they thought was the best guy. And I think the hope probably would be if you develop these guys, maybe you can package, you know, Kuminga, Moody, what Wiseman in some combination with whatever at some point if a star does become available, right? But I think, you know, I wrote about this a little bit. I think the challenge that you face as Golden State is that, you know, it's hard to sometimes to make these guys look good because of, you know, the situation that you're in. And mm-hmm. I think we saw that with Wiseman last year. You know, it was just hard to make him look great. You know, they needed a big. He wasn't quite good enough right away. The Warriors have a bunch of really high field guys, and Wiseman's not a high field guy. So he was like a couple steps behind, right? So, you know, maybe they can, you know, get more out of Kuminga and like get him to sort of access that potential. And I think Moody's fine. He's solid. I don't love him, but I think he's fine, like a solid guy. But, you know, I think their hope would be develop these guys and then maybe it helps you strike, you know, at the deadline or something. But again, Steph Curry is going to hit free agency soon. So it's, you know, there is some type of a ticking clock for them. And I don't think Golden State's done. Like, I'm sure we'll hear about them doing more stuff this offseason because I do know that they know that they gotta make it work. So, and one thing I'll say too.
Go ahead, please.
Last note is that I don't think we can just assume Clay is Clay. Like, you gotta see how he is. And because if Clay is not Clay, they're not going to win the title. So that's, you know, another point I'd make. It's like, I understand taking the long view here rather than reaching for an older prospect you don't like just because. So I wouldn't bash them for what they did. It's just their predicament continues.
For sure. I mean, they're in a tough spot. And that's why I think sometimes, even with like OKC, you see what Presti is doing, getting all these first round picks. There's so much of it is. It's got to be the right pick during the right draft. I mean, you could have the number two pick in a bad draft and it means nothing. You could have the number six pick in a draft like tonight and it's way more valuable. Or you could have number seven where there's a little bit of a drop off and, you know, things change. So the Warriors, I think, got a little bit unlucky there just in terms of where those picks fell. And yeah, it's not that I think that they picked up bad players or anything like that. It's just more so, I think the vets on that team were probably hoping for a little bit more. All right, give me one more team maybe that you didn't love their draft Thursday night or maybe they did something that caught you off guard, et cetera. Who's another quote-unquote loser for you coming out of this draft?
Let's see. I'm still processing what happened, to be honest. I'm looking.
I mean, the Kings seemed to be the team everyone was getting on really early for taking – Mitchell, when they already have Fox and Halliburton, was that as controversial of a pick to you as it was to seemingly everyone else?
Yeah, let's talk about that one. Yeah, I don't know what was said on Twitter because I don't have time to like follow the in-draft discourse. So I say this with no knowledge of what was said. but yeah, I mean, look, Davion Mitchell is like a good player and he plays super hard. He's beloved as a teammate. He's going to push everyone around him. He's continued to get better. He's gonna work. Like he fits what the Kings are building in terms of like high character guys. And they're trying to like, I think Monty McNair is doing a good job, I'll say. And I thought a lot of people said that thought they might take Sengun at number nine. So Mitchell was a surprise pick. It wasn't what anyone expected there. And I think they picked him just thinking we really need defense because they were so bad defensively last year. But my thing is just like when you take an older player like that, Mitchell being 22, it's like you really need those guys to play and, hit right away. And the risk is, well, I don't know if it's risk, but like, look, they have two great guards. They have Fox, they have Tyrese Haliburton, my personal favorite player in the entire NBA. And so it's like, yeah, Davion can play with those guys and you can play three guard lineups and it'll be fine. But I don't know. And it was probably just that they didn't love any of the big enough to go front court there. Which I can understand the argument for, right? Like, it's not totally baseless, but it is surprising. It wasn't necessarily what anyone expected them to do, and Mitchell being an older guy, we'll see how good he becomes in terms of upside. Like, is he really a star? Like, he's not that big, and I think one thing I always harp on, like especially with guards who are known for their defense, is it's just that on-ball defense is such a tough skill to translate to the NBA because in college, you can get up in guys' face and you can really like the way Patrick Beverley guards in the NBA. Not everyone can do that. And even him doing that, he gets burned a lot, right?
Right.
Like even the best defensive guards in the NBA, if you're only 6 feet tall, you're not going to really be able to stop James Harden all the time. And they're not necessarily like versatile. You can't really like switch them around, right? So sometimes having a smaller guy kind of inhibits what you can do on defense because he doesn't have the size to guard up in that or up in position, right? So that was sort of the risk for me with Davion. But we'll see. And I think the Kings are trying to get better, and this pick definitely makes them better now. So I understand why they did it. Maybe it wouldn't have been what I did. I like Book Knight. I would have probably took him, but they also, if they had took him, would have given up 150 points per game.
Yeah, I mean, they were in a tough spot because, like you said, I think Mitchell's a good player. Book Knight was also on the board there. The problem is they still have Buddy Hield on the team. Their two best players are playing point guard and shooting guard in Fox and Haliburton. I do think it's not insane to play a three-guard lineup in the NBA in 2021. It just worries me that they're using a pick, like you mentioned, on an older prospect who doesn't really make sense with their two best players. And the Kings, I think, are also a team that should probably be looking for best player available over fit in most situations. It's just, do you take a guy at nine who, at the end of the day, can he be in a closing lineup with your two most important pieces? I don't know, and that worries me a little bit. And there's somebody sort of, I think, taking a high-floor player, someone who has like an identifiable NBA skill. It just, those moves always worry me a little bit. I want to get to another one of my losers because you brought this team up a little bit too, and I want to get your opinion on what's going on there. But I had Ben Simmons and the Sixers as both losers from this draft. Only because you mentioned this might drag out into the season. I don't see how Simmons can get back on the court with the Sixers when this entire summer has been dedicated to Ben Simmons fake trades. I mean, from the moment, the arena was still, the lights were still on in the Sixers arena when people were coming up with their Simmons fake trades. Obviously, Morey's asking for a lot, and I get it. He doesn't want to tank Simmons' value. He doesn't want to sell low. This is someone who's made multiple All-Star teams, an All-NBA team. At the same time, no team is going to give up something crazy for him after the postseason he just had. What do you make of the Simmons situation right now? Is there a world in which he's trying to rebuild his trade value on the court for the Sixers this season?
I don't know. I mean, like, my gut would be no. I do think this is going to take a little time. It seems like everyone knows it's going to happen. So at some point they're going to, like you can hold out as long as you want, but at some point there will be some impetus. Maybe it is, the start of the season training camp. I don't know. I don't want to like speculate too much on it. But again, just knowing that doesn't surprise me. Just knowing that Philly is not, Daryl Morey is not a guy who really values building through the draft. All the picks he asked for, like I still don't know how much he wanted. And again, I do think they probably are holding out to try to get Lillard. So we'll have to see. I wouldn't say they're like losers of the draft. Like they made a good pick at 28. Like Jaden Springer is a nice, interesting long-term prospect. But obviously they're not a team that uses the draft to get better anyway. So I don't know what I expected.
Would you do Ben Simmons and Tobias Harris for Buddy Hield and Harrison Barnes?
No.
It's not as crazy as it sounds, though. It's not as crazy as it sounds. I think...
I don't know.
You're not getting equal value back in a move like that, but you're getting two pieces who I think fit way better around Embiid. And I think that's what the Sixers' focus needs to be is... I think you need to punt on this idea that you're going to get equal value back for Ben Simmons and realize that by simply putting the right pieces around Embiid, you're going to make your team a lot better. And that's just rangy guys who can shoot. But, you know, we'll see what happens with that. I want to get to what was your favorite pick of the night? What was there a move that really impressed you, that made you happy? You're happy this guy went to this team. You're just happy for this guy, etc. Do you have a favorite pick of the night?
Let me think. I'm looking. It's so funny. I never like fully remember what happened like after after the fact. I mean, I loved the Kai Jones pick at 19 for Charlotte. I think that's just a nice buy. I talked about a little bit already. That was one I liked. Mm-hmm. In the second round, I loved Jason Preston, the Clippers. He was one of my sleepers. I had him as like a late first round guy.
Ooh.
The Clippers absolutely loved him. I think he has a chance to be like their backup point guard next season. You know, that is a pick that I really like. We didn't talk about the Clippers at all, but they had a nice draft getting Preston and then Keon Johnson falling to 21, trade up, take him. You know, Johnson, there was some medical stuff that was part of why he fell. Possible. He was a potential lottery guy. They get him like 10 picks later. Nice value. And I think, you know, he's the type of guy with his skill set. He's a really good defender. He'll be better developing on a good team where they don't have to rush him to like be what he's not. So I think the Clippers had a good draft.
Let's do the crazy thing where it's the draft, you know, the takes haven't even been written yet. But we're going to look ahead to 2022. Who are, if people do want to get into the draft, right, who are the prospects they should keep their eye on? Where can they watch them, etc.? I mean, who are the guys we're going to be talking about a year from now in terms of, you know, who are the prospects NBA teams are already drilling in on?
So as far as the, like, elite, like, high-level top five-ish guys who are kind of, you know, on the radar right now for next year, you know, I think Chet Holmgren will probably be my projected number one going into the year. He's going to Gonzaga. You know, he's a huge, skilled, big, but he's really kind of a, he's more of a, he doesn't really have a position because, you know, he's 6'11", 7 feet tall, but he can really handle, he has guard skills, can really, he's just a unique player to watch. And, you know, he was the centerpiece of the team that just won gold for USA at FIBA under-19s. So, you know, there's a lot of tape on him. You'll watch him at Gonzaga next year. I think he's going to be kind of the big story, you know, whether or not he holds number one the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy who could go that high, Paolo Banchero, who is, you know, going to be the best player for Duke this year. He's an awesome player who I've really liked watching, and he's gotten a lot better over the years. He's gotten into really good shape. But he, you know, I used to think he was like a evolutionary Boris Diaw, but now he's going to be a lot more than that. I always compare guys to Boris Diaw, because I just like Boris Diaw. But Banchero is really good. He can really pass, super skilled, really strong. I think he'll be a fun player to watch for Duke. Because, like, again, these versatile skilled bigs are kind of like where this thing's going, I think. And then, you know, Jaden Hardy is going to be the headliner for G League Ignite next year. A really, really good guard who can really score. There's a couple of interesting international guys. The main one is Yannick Dosa, I think that's how you say his last name. I have to double check. I haven't drilled in on pronunciation. So apologies if that's incorrect. But so he plays in Spain. He's a really, really athletic, a huge, big-time defensive prospect. And I've watched him a couple times. I haven't had enough time to watch him a ton. But, you know, I think he's, you know, 6'11", 7 feet, and he's so rangy and athletic. And again, that's where it's going. It's like these crazy athletic, 7-foot dudes. So,
right.
Go ahead.
No, it just seems like the move, if in doubt, just pick a guy who's at least 6'8", you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And then there are more of those guys too. And then, Jalen Duren, is expected to, I think will play in college next year, it sounds like. I just watched him play at Peach Jam last week. I don't like him as much. He's more of like a traditional big. I don't want to get all the way into it, but he's a guy who I'm not fully sold on, but I think teams have already begun to scout him heavily this spring, anticipating that at these different events. I saw him play at Tango. I saw him play at Peach Jam. And then you have an interesting group of guys kind of coming after that. It's kind of unclear what the hierarchy will be, but you got, former Northwestern ball boy, Patrick Baldwin Jr.
Oh, hey. Jeremy Wu and I have now known each other for almost 10 years, which is disgusting to think about, dating back to our freshman year at Northwestern. But shout out to the Wildcats for getting someone in there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He's not playing for Northwestern.
That's true. Hey, ball boy, we'll take it.
I think you can claim him if you want.
I want to get you out of here on this. Shout out to Reggie Hearn, by the way, G League Ignite legend.
Yes.
Cade Cunningham, we haven't talked about him at all. He went number one to Detroit. I loved his attitude, loved his spirit. He wants to be in Detroit. Is he like a shoo-in for the Rookie of the Year? What kind of presence do you think he can be on the Pistons? Is he a transformational guy? Is he a multiple-time All-Star? How do you feel about Cade Cunningham? Because I loved him just based entirely off his attitude last night.
Yeah, I mean, I love that guy. And like, he's someone who I scouted really heavily for like 2 years, dating back to like January, I think, of 2019, which is, I think, the first time I really saw him play. He's just so unique. And like, these draft discourses always drag out so long that we start nitpicking and stuff. Maybe we forget how much we really like the guy. But I wrote the story on K this week for our site. And as I was doing it, I was just remembering like how I felt watching him. And he's such a special like thinker of the game, and has continued to get better in every way. He doesn't really have any like huge holes in his skill set. I don't know if, I mean, I would guess he's the front runner for a few years because he's going to play a lot, obviously. I would say, Mobley and Green will probably, be in the mix. Like, I could see Thugs, like, being in the mix. Those guys are all really good. Point being, I think he's one of the best prospects to come around, particularly guard prospects. If you think he's a guard, which I think there's still some debate if he's a guard or a wing. I don't really think it even really matters because he can play out at any spot on the floor. He sees the floor so well. He makes all the right reads as a passer. He's become a really good shooter. He's gotten better at creating his own shot. Like, it's hard to – I feel like sometimes when I'm trying to describe him to people, it's kind of, like, hard to understand maybe what I'm saying because I'm just like listing all the things.
There's just not, like, a ton of holes here. Even though he's not, like, a super athlete, in the way that, Jalen Green might be or is, just his impact is just so palpable. And it's a lot of the stuff with him is you really just have to go watch him play. Like, it helps. Not everyone can see him play live, but like, I've just seen him play live so many times that just the little things that he does to win games, it's not really about what his stats are at the end of the day. It's just like his impact is so much higher than anyone else in this draft. And so for me, that was why he was just number one the whole way.
Well, Jeremy Wu, your impact also can't be measured in stats. You're also a special thinker of the game. You're our number one overall pick. Thank you so much for joining our open floor after what is always the longest week of the year for you. You move back to Chicago. What's the best fried chicken spot in Chicago right now for you, for Jeremy Wu?
I have not had enough time to eat any fried chicken since I've been back. I got to go with Harold's. Like,
okay.
Grew up in Hyde Park, gotta go with Harold's. Just don't go to the Harold's downtown. That one's bad.
All right, you heard from Jeremy. Don't go to the Harold's
downtown. I didn't ruin their business.
I think you'll be fine.
I don't know if any of our listeners are Harold's customers who would turn.
Hopefully, at least not in downtown Chicago. Wu, thank you so much, man. I'm excited to come swing by, see you in Chicago. Take care, man. Open floor listeners, thank you so much. We'll be back next week. Michael will be back soon. Don't worry. Keep the emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. Everyone have a great weekend and get ready for a crazy offseason.